that there are things that are so natural for us that they just feel that good, really good. And being men together is something we always were. We were always together out hunting and having our gangs and bands and stuff. So that's how we evolved.
Jordan Peterson has called for a need to rediscover the spirit of the father. Many have been inspired to embark on their own hero's journey to set their life in order. But how do we balance order and chaos to live a life of meaning? What does it actually mean to be surrendered to God? And how do we root ourselves to stable ground as we witness the re-enchantment of reality? At Manifesto, we're engaged on a mission to rediscover and understand manhood, and from this foundation to create a dynamic and thriving community. My name's Paul. Welcome to Manifesto. Thomas Margeson, welcome to Manifesto's Friday community meeting. Good to have you on board here.
Thank you.
Yeah, so we met each other in the Danish Men's Council, where we were both a member for some time, or members of the board for some time, I believe, actually. Or I don't know if you ever were there, right?
Yes, I was. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Yeah. Well, that's something interesting. I've introduced you as the guy to the guys here on Core. I've introduced you as the man who's probably the most out in Danish media talking about the differences between men and women from a kind of well-founded psychological perspective, actually. And so you're a coach, a therapist, a psychologist as well, and you especially work with couples therapy as well. And then you're often called into media to comment on different issues that are coming up as well. And so we were going to have a chat today, and you were going to start us off with talking a little bit about the situation that you're seeing at the moment, and this idea of the basic fundamental differences between men and women, how we're dealing with that and how it's going in this little Nordic country, Denmark, at the moment, right?
Yes. Well, thank you for the kind introduction, and thank you for the invitation to this group. I thought about, I wanted to share a model with you, a simple mental model, which has been proved useful in couples therapy, and also just in coaching, especially with helping men connect with women. And the basis of the model is depth psychology, particularly Eric Neumann, Esther Harding, Marie-Louise von Franz, and C.G. Jung. And that's the model I'm going to tell you about. I think I'll just use some 10 minutes or something, right? And to work with psychotherapy, it's crucial to boil down tools to mental models that you can remember and that are not too complicated. So I'm going to show you a model which is boiled down to such a degree that it's almost a crime, but it's you can work with it and you can understand it. And it's about the difference. You can call it the female-male brain thing, where the male brain is more to systematizing and the female brain is more to empathizing. That's some of the modern terms. In mythological terms, it's about the feminine principle and the masculine principle. And to put some words on what those principles apply to, then the masculine principle is concerned with delineations and categories and judgments, evaluations like black, white, good, bad, beautiful, ugly, you know, thinking, in basically judging, condemning, and anything having to do really with differentiation. And the feminine print, and that's also correlated, or that's also symbolized by the sun and daylight. And the sun then is the symbol of masculinity. And it wants to see everything. And that's why a lot of men have a hard time dealing with political correctness, because I can see it, so why can't I say it? That's the sun. And the feminine in all cultures examined is connected to the moon. And the moon is, the country of the moon is the night. And then in the night, things mesh together and it becomes endless. And the light is not very sharp. It's very mild. It's a very mild light. So the feminine principle is related to relations. It's related to mixing together things. It's related to not categorizations. It's related to the absolving opposites. So basically the feminine principle is related to the night and the subconscious or the sea, whatever is under the surface of the sea. And that's why the Little Mermaid is a girl, a woman. She's underneath the sea in an undivided, not yet individuated mass of life. So that's the masculine principle is concerned with judging and evaluating and categorizing. And the feminine principle is concerned with relationships and the undivided. So those two systems can be set up like this. So the first top of the pyramid, that's two persons, right? So let's just do like this. That's two people, as the man and the woman. And in the top, you have the public reality. That's what Jung may call persona. And this half, you have a private reality. And so in my public reality right now, I'm talking to you guys and I'm trying to live up to the definition and trying to address the topic of masculine, feminine systems. And in my private reality, I also have all kinds of thoughts about the lectures that I've seen today. And I have thoughts about, I bought a beer because I feel sorry for myself after 10 lectures. And I'm not taking a sip because I don't know you guys. I don't know if you would think that would be unreasonable or something. And then below that, we have the deep humanity. That's what Jung would call the common subconscious. You know, that this field of the archetypes and common memories about snakes and whatever. And we have these three levels to communicate from. So right now, let's say Paul and I are talking. Let's Paul be the woman, whatever. It could also just be two people. When you talk from the top, you're just talking about your name. My name is Thomas. I'm an educated psychologist. I'm sat in Copenhagen. That's just my persona. That's just who I am on the surface of things. And I can also from here judge things. I'm sat with a computer. I'm sat with X amount of guys listening. This is just judging what is. This is a more private reality that a lot of men think they're being authentic when they go down there and talk from there. That's what most men in my experience consider being authentic. And in the most communications models, be it assertive communication, nonviolent communication, all kinds of different communications models, then we want people to describe accurately who they are, what they do, what they've seen, what they would like more of. And describe that as accurately as possible to the other side. And then this other side says, okay, I understand. Then you want this and you want that and you want this. And then I want this and I want that. So in a sense, talking from your persona, talking from the top level of your psyche, you're basically just doing your judgment and delivering that judgment to the other person. So when I do couples therapy, I sometimes have guys who say, well, I'm a good boyfriend. And he delivers that parcel to the woman. And because he feels safe in evaluating himself in that way. So the trick with communication with women is that you don't meet them from that level. This level is what you are sure of and certain of. Down here, this is in the common ground. What signifies that is you not being certain in you not knowing for sure, in you being having doubts, in feeling shame about something. That's the field where you connect to the feminine principle. So somehow, the masculine principle is up here, and that is characterized by certainty and judgments and thinking and analyzing and constructing. And the feminine principle is down here. It's concerned with not knowing together. And when both of you don't know for sure, then you enter a field of dialogue, where dia means two and log is logos or logics. Then you actually surrender. Instead of knowing what's good and what's right, then you try to surrender and say, I don't know for sure either. And when a guy in couples therapy says to the woman, I'm not sure either, her love fills the entire room. Because then he has entered a field of consciousness where they have to build something together. It's not based on his judgments or his conceptualizations. It's based on discovering something together by entering a field of not knowing for sure. So in a sense, you could say that in couples therapy or any relating to women, the key, the entrance is not from what you know for sure, is from what you don't know for sure. And in that not knowing for sure, there's a common humanity because the basic themes are known to all. So that's a basic model. And it's a model of a Jungian psychology. You have a top level called, you can call it persona or public appearance. Then you have the next level called private reality, which is a more personal consciousness awareness. And then in the bottom, you have yourself, the self, the common humanity, or the unbounded potential of experience, or whatever you may call that. And when doing couples therapy, if I can get the guy down here just for 3 minutes in 1.5 hour session, the women at least will think it's all the money. It's worth all the money if we can get the guy down there for 3 minutes. But listen here, it's not about getting men to lose all their contours. It's like not like the sun should disappear. It's not like a man should give up his certainty and his judgments and his analytics sense or whatever. It's just a matter of being there sometimes. I think most women would go mad if the man was down there more than, say, an hour a week. Because it's also weakness down here. It's vulnerability. It's lack of knowing who you are. It's lack of knowing what you want. So you shouldn't be there like as the ideal. But you should be able to enter that dark area where you can't really see anything. It's like the night. And the only thing you can actually see in that darkness is the light from the feminine. There are no clear demarcations. You have to hold her hand and say, okay, we don't know both of us. What do we do? And then you kind of hold her hand in the night and you try to walk with her across this country of dimly lit endlessness. Well, that's what I that's a simple communications model which encompasses a whole lot of depth psychology, mythology, and everything. It's just two triangles overlapping. And we need to go into the overlap down in the bottom, which is the self or anima, which is soul, which is a feminine word. In the old days, they also thought that the soul in man was feminine. That's why they called it anima. So there is something about that deep subconscious thing, which the death psychologists at least have thought of as the feminine principle. And as a man, you should be able to connect to that, to connect to the woman at least once in a while. And I'm not a Superman at it either. I do my best, and it's hard to be there in that field, not knowing. But that was that for me, Paul. I think
thanks, Thomas. I really had the impression when you were kind of like holding up the piece of paper and talking to us close to the camera here. I felt this like closed little private room that you were whispering to us secrets from the underworld of connecting with women. That was...
I work really, with pen on paper. Yeah.
So I hope that you guys got the notes there and everything like that.
Yeah, they can ask questions if they want to.
I'll start off, Thomas, by just asking, how are we doing in society today? Do you think with connecting these two principles in ourselves and between men and women, especially? I think you have a very updated view of what's actually happening on the ground in couples relationships in Denmark today. So what do you see is happening?
This model I just showed you here is, on the surface of it, intellectual. It's an abstract concept, but it's really embodied knowledge. It's something you have to experience. And a lot of guys, they have ideological ideas of who they are. They have intellectual shimmering ideas of who they are. Mm-hmm. So when I work with in therapy and couples therapy, this is very much an experience. You can feel it, like you can chew on a slice of pizza. It's an embodied knowledge. And I helped this guy the other day. I've been helping him for half a year or something. And he is 27, a woman about same age, and she got her master's degree while he was just at home and having a part-time job and, you know, not taking life very seriously and drinking too much and stuff. Nice guy, but she went up and left him one day, and he was completely shattered. Because, as he said, I would have been a good father. And that was such a tragedy, because she was not looking for a guy who would be a good father. She was looking for a guy with intentions, who wanted something. So he had misunderstood what it is to be a man. And you can't really tell a guy that. So that's been a long, arduous journey to help him recuperate. And other examples is two architects and the woman, very feminist. And the guy really buying into that ideology, ending up with him doing 2/3 of everything and her being constantly unhappy. And what happened in that relationship was that in her ideological idea of that the woman shouldn't make any more in the home or anything like taking care of the home and the children, she made herself unhappy. So she had an ideological idea of not doing any more in the home and not deciding any more in the home. And in the end, she didn't feel at home. Because mythologically speaking, the woman is the center of the home. So if she leaves that basic motivation, she leaves herself. Mm-hmm. And the guy wasn't happy, she wasn't happy. And through 5 or 10 talks with them, they started realizing they had to become a bit more wise as to how to live together. And one of the key insights I've made is that you can, being a man in a relationship, you really should be careful with dealing with the small pixels of the home, like how you put the fork in the dishwasher. Any man who teaches her woman how to put a fork in a dishwasher may as well just go and hang himself. That's just terrible. So for most guys, it's a matter of taking some steps back and letting go of control of tons of small things. And then you can say, isn't that copping out? And you shouldn't tell this to women because they get insane when we talk about men should worry a bit less about things in the home because they want to share the responsibilities and that. But when the man stops worrying about small pixels, he starts worrying about the bigger pixels. And the bigger pixels is like, what car should we buy? Should we buy a summer house? Or how should we talk to each other? And then the way of selling that idea to feminized men is by saying that, listen here, that's exactly what the male lion does. He doesn't mix himself into racing cups. He doesn't do anything apart from securing the one big pixel, which is the area for the pride, the lion pride. So this taps into what you said, Paul, about the man being this, I think, spiritual leader or something, which I thought a lot about because it's kind of male chauvinist. But in the sense that a man leaves the small pixels alone, he lets the woman bitch now and then without taking it too personally. And then once in a while, when everything is going well, you sit down and then you talk to, I keep looking at myself on the screen, it's so annoying. Once in a while, say once a month or something, you can sit with her and you know, when you walk the dog together or something, and then you could say to her, I think we should be better at talking to each other in a nice way. And she thinks. And she says, yes, of course. So instead of going into all these small arguments or small things, once in a while as a man, you just take it up to a much bigger pixel and say, I don't think we have enough fun. Mm-hmm. I think we should be better at doing great things together and not being hard towards each other. So in reality, what the picture of manliness or being a man in a relationship that I sell and I see working is for the man to let go of a lot of control things at home and not take her emotions too personally or anything. And then once in a while, take it up on the big pixel about how should we live together. And then you're actually also saying to the woman, I trust that you are super wise as to the kids and to me and your sister and my mother. And I know that you know so much and you're so clever, but I would just like us to be even a bit better at talking to each other. So you're actually not telling her what to do. You're showing respect and showing that you know that she perhaps is a bit more engaged in all kinds of kids and things, and that you actually also have an opinion about how you should speak to each other and stuff. So personally, I have argued with my wife like 5 times in 5 years or something. I really don't argue with her at all because I know it's a matter of timing. And when the timing is right, I'll have a talk to her and show her that I'm not against her, that I want the best for both of us. So I see a lot of men being confused as to how to understand themselves and understand their role in a relationship. As perhaps the last word, the connection to women through that common triangle in the mental model is somehow also the relation to woman through your own feminine side, your own anima. So somehow recognizing the feminine quality in yourself somewhere, somehow, and being able to engage in that and connect to her.
Great. Yeah, Thomas, there's a lot of things we've opened up there as well dive into.
Yeah.
What I was really thinking of was, as you were talking, was just about like, you know, being able to exercise that muscle that we have as men of being able to formulate a vision and to inspire other people with a vision, which, you know, we can do together. A lot of guys have an underdeveloped, you know, that guy you spoke about who was just kind of like working part-time and not taking his own life seriously, you know, like he probably hadn't thought very much about like, where am I headed and why am I heading there? And if he can't do that for himself, then he probably can't do it for his family either. And that's, I think, when you talk about that's the biggest pixel is like, where are we headed as a family, and what's our vision for the future, and what do we want to be orientating towards as, you know, a unit together that can really inspire and lead. And I think as a especially that's a solar, you know, male quality of being able to kind of direct and guide like that, right? So that was something. But again, you started off by talking about embodiment, you know. So it's like it's easy for us to intellectualize about these ideas, but actually to live them and experience them is the challenge. So do you have any thoughts or experiences of like what are practices or ways of gaining a deeper sense of embodiment for men in, you know, both being able to access the bottom part of the triangle there, but also to be able to get more clarity on the top part of the triangle, I guess.
Good advice for that. Well, it's really hard to set a direction unless you know where you are. And where you are is also a bodily thing. So I would suggest my personal go-to is writing essays. So writing diary, it's basically a way of analyzing how you felt with this, how you felt with that, how you felt. Because a lot of us guys, we can get caught up in just being productive and not really thinking about how we feel about this or that. We become a bit like robotic. And that's where you can feel that you're being authentic just because you're able to say that you're hungry, you know. So writing essays, writing diaries is a super way to gain better understanding of those levels in yourself. So coaching in a sense it says, Paul, what do you want? What do you want the most? But sometimes that question is difficult to answer because you have to ally yourself with your intuition. And your intuition is something that you have to gain some sort of contact with. Fortunately, there are many ways to get a contact with your intuition. One of them is just writing diary, how you feel about things, what you experience. Right now, I'm coaching a guy who cannot find a girlfriend. He's 33 years old, son of one of the most powerful men in Denmark, good looking, tall, everything, money. And he's dating and dating and dating, and he can't find a girlfriend. Mm-hmm. And he's being too choosy or whatever. And then I gave him this job. Next time you sit at cafes, he works like 15 hours a day. So he sits at cafes and works at night, talking to the states or whatever. Say, every night you have to pick out one woman at the cafe and describe her. Her lips, her hair, her clothes, where she sits, how her voice sounds, who she might be. And then he got back and he read out aloud one of these descriptions, and it was wonderful. It was wonderful. So what I had him do was to actually connect. Instead of just one woman, next woman, one woman, and not forgetting their names, actually deeply connect. And the same goes for writing a diary with words for emotions. I've done that myself. You deeply connect to yourself. And you get a much better idea of the what do you want question. So a lot of the times, what do you want question is the second chapter in the book. First chapter is get a sense of who you are. And I know you've done a lot of judo, Paul. You can get a lot of sense of who you are by playing ice hockey or doing jiu-jitsu or dancing. That also works. It's not verbal. You can also get a better sense of yourself by doing contact sports, but the main go-to is essay writing. Pick whatever topic, happiness or sadness or.
And I've done a lot of just automatic writing as well, where I don't know what I'm going to write. The only rule is you just have to carry on writing.
Exactly, really essay writing, free essay writing. Yeah, and then I would suggest reading Michel de Montaigne as inspiration. He's a great essay writer. Perhaps also read Albert Camus' inspiration, because he understood women better than most authors. Really, really good at being sensual and really good at just describing reality and really connecting to women and connecting to life.
So one of the main tools we use, Thomas, and maybe I'll open up for questions from the other guys after this, but one of the main tools that we use here is men's groups, which are kind of like this open, you could call it a safe space. Although here at Manifesto, we have less focus on, we actually try and create slightly more challenging spaces. But having a place where part of what you're doing is really outsourcing the processing of emotional responses to a group of guys where you kind of share with them and they don't have any kind of investments in it. They don't have any self-interest in it than just like, you know, kind of being there for each other. And so basically what we're doing is we're meeting on a very regular basis and getting to know each other and sharing like the major hangups and barriers and difficulties and challenges and also goals and wishes and visions for our lives. And then, you know, getting an honest response from a group of guys, which kind of like outsources and seeing like, how do people actually respond to this? And can they connect to what I'm saying? And based on that, you know, because I find as well, like, you know, as most men, we're not always very easy for us to connect to our emotions. You know, maybe that's been part of our training or something like that. Maybe that's sometimes a good thing for us to be able to move forward stoically, you know, despite emotions. But it also means that having that band of brothers that I can trust and who want the best for me and who aren't trying to put me down, right? But are trying to lift me up. So I'm curious if you have any thoughts or reflections on that and how to do that well.
Two things. First of all, writing a diary with words for emotions is not necessarily something you should do every day or the rest of your life. It's like a skill. Mm-hmm. So when you've done it for 3 weeks, you kind of get it. You got it. You don't have to do it anymore. You have figured it out. So when you have figured out that you have tons of different colors of the emotions, it's such a valuable input that you don't have to train it. It's like learning how to make a good sauce. So that was really important to explain that. It's not a matter of us delving into our emotions all the time, but there are a lot of guys who really don't have a clue. Yeah. And they can also read this nonviolent communication book. That's also a good insight book.
But if you continue talking like that 5-10 years later, all your communication is nonviolent communication, it gets a little kind of
you shouldn't practice
artificial,
it.
Right?
But you shouldn't practice. You should never practice nonviolent communication. Never.
But it's you like can a tool to gain more awareness, but then to be left behind.
To awareness. You can use it as an awareness book that emotions are okay and needs are okay. Actions may not be. But so it's a great book for awareness, and I've used it with 20, 30 clients, but not to use it. And then these men groups, a lot of us, we are a religious species, so we need role models and ideals. And a lot of us grow up without role models and ideals. I think I'm 50 this year sometime. So I've grown up with John Wayne and Clint Eastwood. They were like crystal clear role models. So I would say I have those guys as role models still. Mm-hmm. But it gets more and more obtruse, is that the word? It gets more and more vague what these role models are. So that guy who thought that would be all fine if he was just going to be a good dad, he had no role models. He didn't have anything resembling a sensible role model.
He heard in the media, right? Like the media tells him, like, oh, you just have to, like, that's what the media goes on about. And so you follow what the culture says.
The worst thing you can ever do is try to formulate masculinity based on these hysterical discourse thing, feminism. That's just terrible, really terrible. But I can tell you that my kid who's 18 and all these friends, they're just taking the piss out of that all the time anyway. So we shouldn't be too worried. But so in men's groups, you can get different kinds of role models. There are different role models. It's not the same, but you can have different ones that you kind of emulate, that you get inspired by. I haven't been in a men's group with Matthew McConaughey, but I read his book Green Lights the other day. And I kind of felt a bit like Matthew McConaughey for about a month or something. He was a great role model. He's super cool and has a great book and stuff. So we need models to be inspired by. And you can meet those guys in these places. Also, you can be confronted with some of your own bad ways if the circle is authentic and stuff. We need to take care of each other, of course, but you can also be confronted with some of your thoughts that may be too abstract or too dominant or whatever. And you can get reality another word for it, you can get some of your thoughts reality tested, that there are things that are so natural for us that they just feel that good, really good. And being men together is something we always were. We were always together out hunting and having our gangs and bands and stuff. So that's how we evolved through the past 5 million years. And I myself, I made this think tank with like 5 super nice guys. And we met like every 2 months or something, discussing something with articles or business or whatever. And that was a relatively strange thing for me, being the academic that I am with my psychologist friends and stuff, to, it was just men. What was that about? But it just felt real good. It felt like being a pals in school again or something. It felt so natural being just some men together hanging out and having fun. And then one day, and also discussing things and producing things. And then one day we had this group at some guy's home where his wife was there. And the entire evening was just totally different. We didn't talk in the same way. We didn't talk about the same things. It was just awkward. So I think that men together is an archetypal kind of setting. That's how we've been. We've been away for days at the time in small groups of men hunting. So there's something deeply natural about it. I noticed that I can talk and talk and talk, Paul, so you can just stop me. Paul, you've muted.
I'm muted, yeah, sorry. So I was about to say, like, and certainly we need to, you know, we're never gonna go back to a society where we're men and women separate all the time. And so I think every man needs to, you know, consider how he can get better at, you know, being in mixed gender situations, if they, for example, feel awkward when we're in women's female company, right, or whatever. It's like you can't be there are still jobs where you can just be men together, but the vast majority of us are increasingly having to go into this bottom part of the triangle, right? Anas, you asked a question on the chat. Do you want to pose it to us publicly, and then we'll stop the recording after we've answered that and go into just a private conversation as well?
Sure.
And welcome to your first Friday call, Anas. Nice to have you on here.
Yeah, happy to be here. Yeah. And actually pronounced Anis.
Anis, thank you. Sorry.
I wasn't sure I heard correctly. I thought Thomas said that we should not use nonviolent communication. And I just want to clarify if he meant that in a certain situation or if that's something that's to be avoided. Yeah.
Oh, well, my point was that if you are to, because the system is so, it sounds like you're training to become a psychotherapist when you use it, as it says in the book, and you use words that are not natural for the person you're talking to. So you use words like, I need and I feel. And if a leader or a guy in the moving company says it to the other guy, I feel and therefore I need, whatever. The language itself is something which is designed to work in psychotherapy. So whenever you work with these different paradigms in business or in everyday life for that matter, you really have to consider the language. I taught American students the other day in appreciative inquiry, which talks about dreaming and destiny and design. They have these steps you go through in developing ideas for companies. And even the American students who are the most keen on using terms like that, they didn't like them either. And then I said, that doesn't matter because we can use the exact same method using different words. Instead of saying discovering, we can say what is good. Instead of saying dreaming, we could say, what would we like to be better? Instead of saying destiny, we can say deliver. How do we deliver on this? So my critique of nonviolent communication is not the communications model in itself, really. It's how it's made out to be used. It's how it's the language. It just becomes, you feel very easily manipulated if somebody is talking to you in nonviolent communication terms. You feel manipulated, and people don't respond well to that. Mm-hmm. So if you were to use it, you should say, "I'm sorry, can we do this conversation in nonviolent communication? I know it may sound weird, but let's try." Then perhaps. So that was my only notion.
Yeah, I can add a reflection. Today, Bolo and I had a conversation with a guy who's very experienced in another men's work organization called Mankind Project. And there they have a very structured way of having all of their conversations. And they use very, very fixed terms and kind of almost describe processes for dealing with different kinds of situations. And these can be very, very helpful for guys to build up basic competencies and to help them to, you know, map out ways of relating with other people. But he, after like 10 years with this organization, this guy felt like, you know, that it become like this kind of frozen, ritualized way of being that these guys, as soon as someone didn't talk with these fixed ways of talking, then they would all like get like afraid or upset or unsafe or something like that, right? So they'd become dependent on these structures. And so I think for me, the way it is, that is we need to be aware, like we can be explicit about when we're using the structures and we use them to help us to establish new skills. But once we've mastered those skills, the expectation is to be able to then let go of the structure and just to be able to communicate freely from the heart or something like that, not being, become a crutch.
Have the knowledge in the back of your head, so you know it. You know the system. You know you shouldn't you should try and stay on your own half of the court and stuff. You have the knowledge. Mm-hmm. But training communication systems is fun and it works. But whatever, I feel like I'm beating a dead donkey. My only point was to make it pragmatic. You know, good. Something you can use.
And so, are you satisfied with the answer for there?
Yes, I think it's very clear. Yeah, thank you.
Good. Okay. So I'm going to stop the recording here, guys. Thank you for people who are following online. We'll continue the conversation here.
You've been listening to Conversations on Masculinity with Manifesto. We enjoy good discussions, but far more importantly, we are a real community with plenty of opportunities for you to engage online and in person. So check out our website on manifesto.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed the content here, then please share this podcast with a friend. Thanks.